So I don't know if you noticed, but you know, this is one of those gospel texts where I'm not so sure I want to say thanks be to God. First of all, it definitely feels a little bit like a joke for those organizing the lectionary that they picked these texts for Father's Day. Man against his father, foes within the household, can't love dad more than God. Kind of ironic coming from a guy who has two dads. One of them is God. But it's just strange. And then we also get this exemplary example of fatherhood in Genesis, where Abraham banishes his own son and baby mama into exile. Oh, gosh. I think we will leave Father's Day to Hallmark and barbecue and all the cliches, and remember the honesty that these holidays and relationships always like make more messes in us. They're full of complexity, and so maybe we're in good company today with these texts. But let's focus on the gospel. Jesus just seems grumpy in this text. Isn't he supposed to be the Prince of Peace? What about love and compassion and bridge building? What's all this nonsense about coming to bring division? When the authorities come to arrest Jesus in the garden, doesn't he tell Peter to put away his sword? I think there's a couple of reasons this passage goes the way it does. This is one little snippet in this bigger missionary discourse that we've been working our way through the last couple of weeks. Jesus commissions his motley little crew of fishermen plus tax collector plus betrayer. And he sends them out to be vulnerable with nothing in their pockets, to be embodied mercy and compassion among those who are sick and hurting in their local communities. And yet, as Jesus does this, he warns them that they are being sent out like sheep among wolves. This work of love and compassion will not be received with a welcome committee and cookies. For change is hard. It just is. We're wired as humans this way. Our hearts and brains don't deal with change well. Shifting culture, breaking open societal norms, and tearing down boundaries messes with our equilibrium. There is that great dad joke. How many Lutherans does it take to change a light bulb? Change? What's this talk about change? Change is hard. Uncovering uncomfortable truths and asking for something different rarely goes well. And Jesus here acknowledges that. Following him, working for this anti-empire kingdom of love and mercy and welcome and abundance and equity, there's a cost to it. And in some ways, this message was not just for Jesus' disciples that he's giving this pep talk to. I think it was also for the generation that came after them. For the author of Matthew was writing to an audience of mostly new Jesus converts who came from a Jewish background. They too had experienced division as they chose to follow Jesus' teachings, persecution from their families, government and religious authorities. This Jesus movement was creating cultural upheaval. Righteousness not based on what you do or how you pray or what you pay or what family you came from, but solely based on belovedness and acceptance. It threw the whole Greco-Roman patron-client system into flux. And choosing this way of life had a cost. People were outcasts from their families. Some even went to prison. Some were tortured. And some died terrible deaths. Indeed, the Prince of Peace brought a sword and was hacking the rules and boundaries to pieces. And it was not pretty. But it was all for the sake of a deeper peace that surpasses all understanding. and this hope to create and carve out a more beautiful world, not just for a few, but for everybody. I will be the first to confess that this text makes me really uncomfortable. I'm not a big fan of conflict. I know it's necessary, but I am a 2 on the Enneagram. That is the helper. If you aren't familiar with the Enneagram, it's kind of like Myers-Briggs, but a little simpler. There's only 9 types. And not that these are perfect descriptions of every person on the planet, but I think they're helpful. Helpful insights into the way that you think, and why you think that way, and why others don't think the way that you think. My favorite book about it is called The Enneagram Made Easy, and it's full of pictures. And there is this beautiful cartoon in it where all 9 personalities are sitting around a dinner table with speech bubbles above their heads. And above the number 2, it says, "I hope all my friends are having a good time." At my worst, I want people to like me. So, you know, the people-pleasing tendencies. And at my best, with a lot of good therapy and coffee and courage, I'm well adjusted and able to say what is needed, and I'm able to actually be a helper in the ways that it's actually helpful. So Jesus' description of discipleship in Matthew is my absolute worst nightmare. For as a 2, I really just want everyone to love each other and have a good time. Which is why I think this cultural moment we are living in right now just feels so heartbreaking. Because like Jesus pokes, we aren't called to be quiet. We need to keep speaking up from the rooftops if necessary. And by doing so, it might not make us popular. I've gone to more protests this year in 2026 than I have in my entire life. And the last protest I went to was a couple months ago. It was with the Poor People's Campaign, and they talked about the sinfulness of this Iran war. And our bishop held this really sobering sign that read, as reported by the Institute for Policy Studies National Priorities Project, "This war is costing an estimated $1 billion per day. And over the course of a year, $365 billion could instead provide for the common good by funding 2.73 million registered nurses for a year, 160.67 million people on SNAP benefits, 104.73 million children on Medicaid, 41.69 million public housing units, 67.92 million adults on Medicaid, 19.92 million veterans receiving VA medical care for a year, 21.24 million Head Start slots for children, 21.85 million people with paid parental leave, 8.92 million university scholarships, 3.43 million livable wage jobs for single parents, 3.88 million elementary school teachers, 4.41 million firefighter positions, 9.77 million federal student loan forgiveness payments, and 688.84 million households with solar electricity. These numbers are staggering. And together as clergy and people of faith, we stood there in front of the White House and we prayed for our nation. And my heart just hurt because I do not want to spend my Mondays protesting. I want humanity to do the right thing. And yet I've come to believe, like Jesus says, we can't build God's peaceable, beloved kingdom without creating some friction. We have to tell the truth for the sake of abundant, loving, beautiful, whole life that God intends for us and for our neighbors, especially those who are afraid, suffering, hiding in closets. It's not an easy time to be a follower of Jesus. Maybe it never has been. You know, this passage that we hear today has been used by the Christian nationalist movement to prove that they are on the correct path and being persecuted for their faith, as far as the martyrdom of Charlie Kirk, even. And this passage has been used against LGBTQIA folks when their families opt to cast them out with an ultimatum that they have to choose between their family and their sexuality and their faith. There's a lot of controversy out there right now on a wide spectrum of issues that we're facing, and everything just feels so painful and raw. And from this tension, there is incredible loss and grief. And yet it's incredibly important to remember, as we read Jesus' teachings and guidance and passages like this, that they need to be read in the wider context of what Jesus' ministry was all about. Welcoming the enemy, inviting children and women to be a part of a conversation, healing and mercy and compassion for everyone, and forgiveness to the 77 times 70th time. This is the heart of the gospel. This is the foundation we stay grounded in as we do this hard truth-telling work, facing conflict as we do it. As people of faith, we have something to say. And that's what kept me grounded on Pennsylvania Avenue that Monday. Remember the poor, feed the hungry, comfort the sick, love your neighbor, do not kill. These are the things worth speaking up for. This is the moment we were created for. And while it seems the world is falling apart at the seams, we know as resurrection people that from the death of old comes new life. Transformation we did not fathom was possible. We may lose what is comfortable, but we will gain what is profound and everlasting. And through it all, we hold on to this hope that it does not depend all on me or on you, but we are a part of a company that is deep and wide and holy and broken and messy. We are a part of this great company of saints. And Jesus, in this epic pep talk, terrifying, he says, "Do not be afraid. I know every sparrow in a tree. I know the hairs on your head, including that Highland cow on our bulletin cover." God knows. And we are loved no matter what happens next. I think the quirky thing about this text is we don't even get to hear what happens from this text. So Jesus gives this kind of epic, sobering pep talk to the disciples, and we don't know what they did with it. We don't know how it went or if they even took Jesus up on his charge to go. But what I do know is we are Christians today somehow in some miracle way, because somewhere over the centuries, Christians have spoken up and change has happened. And we are here because of their bravery. Our hymn of the day today is a poem written by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And he wrote it to his mother while he was in prison. It's one of the last things he wrote. And Dietrich was a Lutheran pastor. And he grew up in Germany. He was German. And when Nazi activity started to perk up, he actually moved here. He got a graduate degree. When all else fails, go back to school. But he wrestled and he wrestled and he wrestled with what the right thing to do is. And he eventually went back to Germany and he joined a group of people who tried to assassinate Hitler. And it didn't go well. They didn't succeed. In fact, he was arrested, hence this poem from prison. And he eventually was killed for his work. And even in his letters from jail, we hear this wrestling. What is the right thing to do? And that's okay. I think that's a great place to be as Lutherans, is that we are called to be in community together and to wrestle with these things. But dear ones, I wonder, where are you being called to be brave, to speak out on a rooftop for the sake of love? Today is DC Pride, and Friday was Juneteenth. There are plenty of things to reflect about in these complicated days. But where is Jesus inviting you into deeper discipleship? In a way that perhaps might be a little costly. No matter what, may you know in the days ahead that your pastor is praying for you, and I'm here if you need support. For as we do this holy, challenging work, we are never alone. Amen. Thanks be to God.